Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Somebody please think of the children.
And welcome back to Little Cuts, our weekly minisode where we dig into the things that we've been watching, I believe, recently. I'm Terry.
I'm Mary Beth. Yes, just watching. This week we are talking about a harrowing true story, haunted swimming pools, giallo starring a snack, great, psychosexual slashers, gross zombies, and a riveting screen life mystery.
I'm so excited to chat with you about this riveting screen life mystery.
But first, I think I know what this is, but a harrowing true story?
Yeah, so I've been wanting to watch this movie since I heard about it, and it as of yesterday, as of the day before this recording aired, it is now on Netflix, and it is J.A. Bayona, who did The Orphanage, as well as When a Monster Calls. It's his adaptation of the same story that was adapted for Alive. This one is called Society of the Snow, and It is about a rugby team that crashes in the Andes in the 1970s, and following the passengers who survive the crash and have to, you know, try to survive in this snowy wasteland. Have you seen this one yet, Mary Beth?
No, I really want to, though. I've heard good things. I have the screener, but I have not yet watched it. But now that I know it's on Netflix, it's even easier to watch.
Yeah. It's, so it's really good. It is very harrowing. The plane crash itself is very micro in that it, like, focuses on a very small part of it, and yet it is so incredibly harrowing. Broken bones, people flying out the back of the plane, like, it's intense as hell. And then the plane crashes, and of course, if you have seen Alive or you know what the story is, eventually they're stuck there for 72 days, and eventually cannibalism happens. I would say that the movie does a very respectful job of tackling that, weirdly bringing up the idea of consent, because, like, initially one of the guys talks about how he doesn't feel like the dead people have given them consent to be eaten, and is really concerned about, because they're very religious, it's a religious school, so they're very concerned about their afterlife.
Interesting.
And so it delves into that. It is not gratuitous in terms of, like, the cannibalism. Obviously you're seeing them eat meat, but, like, it does not focus on that to the same extent that, like, a salacious story typically would. And I would say that this honors the victims and the survivors incredibly well. Whenever there's a death, we get the name of the person and how old they were. Like, it is very much respecting, like, what happened here.
Okay.
And trying to tell a story without being as salacious as something involving a plane crash, cannibalism, could do. I found it very intense. It's long. It's 2 hours and 24 minutes, but it is...
Jesus.
I really don't think... I don't think you could cut anything from it. Like, it does a very incredible job of laying out the events as they happened, to the point, like, you could go to Wikipedia and you could see that this, like, the main events are all laid out in terms of the book that this is based on, and in terms of, like, the historical documents that, or at least on Wikipedia, are linked to. So I think it's really good. It's very... J.A. has proved that he can do, like, disaster films, because he did, what was that called, The Impossible?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, was that Owen Wilson?
The tsunami? I can't remember who was
in it. I think it was Owen Wilson and Naomi Watts.
Yeah,
oh, no, was it Ewan McGregor?
Oh, yeah, I think it was Ewan McGregor. I'm pulling it up right now.
I think this is another movie about white people trying to survive a disaster.
Yeah.
Oops!
And, yeah, so it's I found it to be very, very good. And I definitely recommend it. It is on Netflix as of today. So
okay.
You can easily go watch it. And I know that it's being put forward as like a foreign language film for the Oscars. Like put forward.
It's on like is it on the long list or whatever?
Yeah. So yeah, I highly recommend it. It was a really good watch. But that's the Society of the Snow, or La Sociedad de la Nieve in Spanish. But that's Society of the Snow. Let's go from a freezing place to water. I want to hear about the haunted swimming pool that seems to be divisive on Twitter as of right now.
So I saw Night Swim, the token January horror movie theatrical release that we get every year. And it was okay. I think I'm on the more positive end of the spectrum here, and I'm not even that positive, which feels mean to say. I feel bad. Like, I am not here to, like, pan this movie, because I actually had a lot of fun with it. Like, it's kind of silly, but, like, I don't know. It's a haunted swimming pool movie. Of course it's going to be fucking silly. You know what I mean? Like, So I kind of went into it with that expectation. And, like, it's a movie that tries very hard to, like, use tropes, but stretch them as far as you can to try to make something a little bit different. So, like, the family is rather well written. Like, there's a lot of really interesting little, like, conflicts going on here. The mom character is written a little bit better than a lot of other, like, moms in horror as of late. You know, like, I could see the vision and, like, what they were trying to do here. I think there was something really interesting with, like, the concept of it. I think the way they shot the pool was amazing. Like, the cinematography and the ways they were able to make the pool feel so scary was really interesting. Like, and of course, like, they could have really stayed away from that, but they do a lot of really cool stuff with the underwater, like, photography and, like, looking up at the surface and the idea of getting lost in the water. It's really, and so, like, technically it's a very interesting movie, and I think it does some really cool stuff with making something like a pool so scary. It just, like, falls apart. What's it about? Oh, yeah, that's important. Okay.
Because I honestly don't know, other than, like, what I've seen in the trailer of someone playing Marco Polo in the pool.
Yeah, so a lot of the marketing is like, oh, it's about this baseball player, Ray Waller, who's played by the very cute Wyatt Russell, who we've also seen in the new Monarch show. Yeah. He plays a baseball player who was a pro, he was really good, but he has been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, or MS, and so he and his family are trying to find a place to live so he can kind of, like, start a new phase of his life, knowing his diagnosis and trying to, like, regain strength and all that stuff. So, you know, already we have some conflicts going on, and they are trying to find a place to live that will be kind of more conducive to a lifestyle of someone who has a disability, but they find a place. It's not what they want. It's not what they need, but it's what they want. It's got a really nice pool, and he's like, oh, well, my doctor said if I do hydrotherapy and swim, it'll help me. So we need to get a place with the pool. So they're like, sick, this place is perfect. Guess what? That pool is spooky. And there's spooky stuff in the pool. But it's like the dad starts getting better after swimming in the pool, but then weird shit starts happening also. And it's like the mom and the kids all having experiences. I keep calling it the Amityville Swimming Pool. That is the title of my review, because it is very much like the dad goes crazy and the kids and the mom are like not sure what to do about it. And it's like kind of how that unfolds. Really interesting idea. Fumbles the execution. Ending falls apart. They did not know how to end it. I don't think they really thought about, like, the implications the ending has in terms of, like, disability. Like, it feels very clunky and very silly, like, and not in a fun way. Like, you know, like, I don't understand. I think someone rushed you to make this, and, like, you did not have time to, like, write a better ending. So, yeah, I mean, like, it's not great, but it's fun. I think they do a cool job with the pool, and, like, the characters are way better, are written way better than I had anticipated. It's fine.
It's based on a short film, right?
Yes. It is based on a short film that this previous director... I think... Hold on a second. Yeah, it's based on a short movie with like a little boy in a pool. And it's good. And that, the thing is, this is another one of those situations where like the short film is really good, but them trying to put lore behind it kind of made it fall apart a little bit. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. Yep.
And it had potential, and I just am bummed that it kind of fumbles the bag a little bit here in terms of just like sticking the landing. Because it could have been like a mid plus, but really it's kind of just like a mid minus.
Gotcha.
But
yeah, that makes sense.
But hey, they do a really cool job shooting the swimming pool. I think it's pretty smart. So I'm gonna just blame Blumhouse. Sorry, blame the corporations.
That's fair.
Let's distract ourselves from that by about a giallo starring a snack.
Yes. Okay. So it is snack. Giallo January, and oh, yeah. I was like, you know what, I bought a number of Italian horror movies from the Black Friday sale that Severin was putting on.
Oh, okay.
And they finally came, and I've been waiting for them. I've been waiting for them to get here because I've been all of a sudden in this mood to watch Italian horror. And with it also being, you know, Giallo January, I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch a little bit more, some more Giallo. So I put a recall out. This movie came up a couple times by a number of different people, called The Fifth Chord, which was directed by Luigi Bozzoni. And it is, I mean, it has all the hallmarks. It has like, it opens up with this really kind of fun, like we're listening to a tape of a recording of the killer, and he's talking, and he has like the kind of creepy voice, and he's talking about how he wants to do murder and the excitement and the thrill and pleasure of stalking the victims. And then he's talking about the ways that he would do it. And it's like, it's gives kind of an ominous opening start to this movie. And then we get like this technique that I'm like, I always just think of as a Yorgos thing, because like there's a small lens that we're seeing things through. At one point we get a killer, we almost get like almost a killer POV, a POV shot. And then it also kind of has like this small lens type
like feel to it.
But like the whole screen is not, no, but like the one where it's like all the screen is all black and there's like a small focus.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That Yorgos has done a couple times in his movies. And it stars Frank Nero, who is an absolute snack in this. He's a gorgeous man. And he is a journalist, and he is pursuing a serial killer who seems to be targeting acquaintances of his. The police start to think that maybe he's a suspect in the investigation. So it has very similar, a journalist dealing with a serial killer. Police think that he might be the one, so he has to go solve the murder himself. This movie is shot by Vittorio Storaro, I believe is his last name,
okay.
Who would go on to be the cinematographer for Apocalypse Now, just a few years later.
Shit, okay.
Yeah, and it looks like a master cinematographer was shooting this. It is a gorgeous movie. There's this one shot of like a mirrored building, as the two people are talking about it, and we're seeing the reflection of another building in it, and it's just, it's gorgeous. There are some really gorgeous things, and the finale of this is has kids in peril, has a dark house, has like this really terrifying moment of like hands coming out of darkness. It uses darkness really well. In fact, if this was one of those, this is a movie that if someone's parents allowed them to watch as a kid, that there is a couple moments towards the end of this that I think would leave an indelible scarred for life moment or thought in their head. What I find interesting about this movie, and I started thinking about this in terms of like giallo maybe in general, but I'd have to like do a little bit more digging, is the way in which the finale of American slashers are usually a young woman running from the killer. Whereas this movie and a number of ones involving male detectives, particularly with giallo, is like the protagonist chasing after the villain. And so there's some interesting things here.
Huh. I've never thought about that before.
Yeah. I thought about it here because I was like, oh, so we're getting like, he's the final girl, but no, he's chasing after the villain because he wants to find out who the killer is. And there's an interesting twist on who the killer is and why they have a motive. One that I dare not spoil, but like makes me like this movie even more.
Okay.
But I can't say why without spoiling why.
Okay.
But this is a movie that I will just say was definitely up my alley. And we'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I really enjoyed this one. It's streaming on Tubi.
Oh, cool.
And I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. I'm thinking about buying the Arrow Blu-ray release of it because I really enjoyed it. So that's The Fifth Chord.
Okay, cool. I was looking at some of the, like, the stills from it, and it looks cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's gorgeous. I don't think the one I watched was as pristine as some of the images on IMDb, which makes me wonder if the Arrow release is more cleaned up. But it is.
Okay.
It looks nice. And
hell yeah,
Frank Nero. Okay. He's a hottie.
Yeah, he looks like he's got like the Burt Reynolds vibe with like the strong facial hair, like black,
gorgeous
like
eyes, strong,
dark facial hair, and like very defined features. And that sounds gay.
Well, I'm not gonna say that it is or not.
I know. Yeah, don't say anything. I'm just saying. Like, I'm just saying. You know.
And you should just say, because you might be correct. You might be correct. But that's a story for another day. Let's talk about keeping with the slasher trend, let's talk about psychosexual slashers.
This is a movie I've been meaning to watch for quite some time, and I finally watched it. I've had the screener for a bit, but I watched Bliss of Evil.
Okay.
Which is an Australian slasher from last year. It had a pretty decent festival circuit, and then it went on to like AVOD platforms. Like, it's on Tubi, you can rent it. And I got a link from the team, and I finally watched it because, it's a queer slasher about a woman and, like, a band. And, I heard,
it's queer?
Like, yeah, it's queer. The lead is in a relationship with a woman, and like they kiss a bunch and like are very much, and there's like queer making out and stuff, so it's like pretty queer, and it's pretty brutal. It's interesting because like it's people have talked about like, oh, it deals a lot of intense themes, and I was like, oh cool, like that's my shit. And so I was like minorly disappointed only because like this is not that bad compared to other stuff I've seen, but then I also realized that my baseline here is like threshold. Not what other people's are. So I'm watching it. I'm like, I mean, this is really well done, and I like what they're doing, but like, it's not that bad. And I was like, oh, you have just become numb to like movies about like rapists and stuff. And it's like, oh, that's why. Knock knock. Who's there? It's Mary Beth's brain being a silly goober. I can't say like too much about it because it's one of those movies that like you can spoil it really easily. But I will say it's a quite fascinating take on a rape revenge story is kind of what
okay
say. And like psychosexual is not really a spoiler because I can't tell you exactly what is going on with the psychosexual part, but let's just know it is a weird psychosexual situation, and it is very strange and very fucked up, but also I think very well done and very interesting. And like, I don't think I'm going to be very vague about this. Not a lot of movies deal with, like, queer women being raped by straight men, I think. I think a lot of it, like, there isn't ever really that discussion of, like, when that happens to queer women in a lot of movies, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of it, it's a more complex issue that not as many movies tackle in terms of, like, on top of that, you know what I mean? And this movie, I think, is really looking at that in a really important way in terms of, like, PTSD, and then also you're in a queer relationship. What does that mean, like, to be, like, assaulted by a man? It doesn't, like, dive too deep into that, but I think it really is an interesting angle to the whole thing. I think it could be way bloodier. It's not as, you know, as bloody as I would have wanted, but I'm still really impressed with it. I think they reveal the killer actually pretty early on, which I think is a really interesting kind of subversion, and because when you know who it is, it kind of, like, even more ups the stakes of the scenario in, like, a really fucked up way. So I like how it plays within slasher convention. It's mostly queer women in it. There's a couple straight guys who are annoying, but, like, it's a pretty good rape-revenge slasher, like, with, like, zero, like, no budget. You know, like, yeah, it's not perfect, but, like, I think it's a really admirable piece of filmmaking that I think is pretty decent, and I think is, like, tackling a lot of really interesting issues in the horror format, and, I'm really glad I finally watched it.
You've made me want to watch it, because, like, it kept coming up. I would see it, you know, it did its festival circuit, and I kept seeing it come up, and I don't know, nothing about it, like, really grabbed my attention, but hearing you talk about it, I'm like, ooh, I should have watched it. And it is streaming on Tubi, it looks like, right?
Yeah, it is.
Sweet. I'm going to have to add that to my...
Yeah, and, like, it's been on my... It was on my radar, but, like, the producers reached out to me, and they were like, we'd really love... And I was like, all right, fuck it. Like, I need to watch this. If you're going to be cool enough to email me, then, like, I'll do you the courtesy. And I was like, goddamn, actually, that was pretty fucking good. Like, yeah, actually. But, yeah, so that's Bliss of Evil. It's... I think it's great. It's, like, a good sub-90-minute queer slash subversive slasher. I think it's, like... It's great indie filmmaking. Yeah, it's got its imperfections, but, like, who cares? You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those movies where, like, for me, it's really cool that it just exists. So, like, go into it with that perspective. That's what's
cool.
Gross zombies.
Yes. So, again, on my Italian horror kick.
Oh, okay. Ooh, more. Okay.
Yes. And... We had talked about The Beyond, Lucia Fulci's The Beyond, with Trevor Henderson, and this was, like, the middle part of Lucia Fulci's, what is it colloquially known? Gates of Hell. Like, so the fans call it the Gates of Hell trilogy, and it was, and The Beyond is the middle movie in that loosely tied trilogy. And so this last year, I think it was this last year, Cauldron Films put out a 4K release of City of the Living Dead, which is the first film in the Gates of Hell trilogy. And so I've been wanting to watch the other two films in that for a while. And I just ordering all these Blu-rays from Severin from Italian Horror just like pushed me forward. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch City of the Living Dead. And then I'm going to watch the third film in the trilogy. So this is the first film. Before The Beyond came out in 1980, City of the Living Dead, it's also called Gates of Hell, was another movie, because you know Italian movies, you got to have multiple names for it. And this one is loosely, based on H.P. Lovecraft. Like, it's a cosmic horror-y zombie movie that takes place in the town of Dunwich, which is a H.P. Lovecraft town. So it opens up with, like, this priest who is walking through a cemetery and then hangs himself. And it turns out that we're watching this happen through a medium that is being told in a seance in New York City, way, I don't know how far away. I don't know where Dunwich is actually located in this universe, but in New York. And they're doing this, the seance, and this one woman starts to see the priest hanging himself, and she freaks out and breaks the circle. They think she's dead. And they bury her, only to find out she's alive still. And this investigative journalist, it ends up like coming across the story, and he's very curious about it. And she comes to tell him that, you know, this guy hung himself, and it's going to open up the gates of hell, and the invasion will commence on All Saints Day, just a few days away. So they need to get to Dunwich and figure out how to seal the gates of hell before the dead populate the world. So we follow them on their journey to Dunwich, and then we also follow some people in Dunwich as they are dealing with the start of, like, zombies coming from the dead. And the thing I love about Lucio Fulci are his zombies are gross. His zombies are so gross. There's a lot of worms. There's a lot of muddiness.
They're so gross. They're so dead. So gross. They're just, like, so dead.
Yeah. And the priest... keeps showing up around places and causes, like, supernatural events to occur. One woman starts to literally vomit up her intestines.
Oh my god.
Yeah, really? They're just sitting in car and she's just, like, barfing up just intestines after intestine after intestine, and then more organs start falling out of her mouth. Really gross stuff. And there's a scene involving a power drill that honestly has to be seen to be believed, because I was trying to figure out when the cuts were happening in terms of it, like, going into someone's cheek and it being, like, you know, like the eye in Zombie 2 where the lady gets pushed in it. Like, I was waiting for, like, the cut where it becomes a little obvious over time, but I'll tell you that this effect is still gag worthy today, and I'm like, that is impressive. This movie made me feel very nauseous. There's, like, one moment where the windows burst open and the people inside start getting pelted with maggots. Turns out they use 22 pounds of maggots in this scene. 22 pounds of little maggots.
Where you get 22 pounds maggot?
I don't know.
Where you get? Why? How? And
they just pelt them with it. Like, it is just shooting in on them.
Is it worse than like, Phenomena? Floor,
the sound design makes it infinitely worse here, in my opinion.
Okay.
And there's a sequence where they're just standing in this room and the floor is just writhing because of all the maggots that have been shot into the room. And so this movie made me very nauseous cannon? In sparts. Yes. Sparts. Parts.
Wait, is a maggot cannon?
Yeah.
Like worm cannon and all jacked up and full of worms, but with maggots?
Yes. Just pelting these poor actors.
That's...
Like, they're standing there, like,
it's absolutely incredible, and also, like, the worst thing I've ever heard, you know? Like, I love it from, like, a technical craft level, but, like, as a person, that's repulsive.
It was incredibly repulsive to watch. So, congratulations,
because holy shit.
Yeah. So, I don't think, story-wise, it's as interesting as The Beyond. I don't think it is as like, beautifully shot. As The Beyond. I think The Beyond has some really good cinematography in it.
That's the one where...
But...
No, sorry. I'm getting all my Italian horror mixed up.
The woman in the middle of the road that, like, on that bridge that they keep seeing, the old woman.
Yes.
And the dog, and they end up, like, weird time loops running through the hospital and ending up... Yeah. So this one definitely feels like a step up, or a step... in the right direction of him getting to The Beyond, and I'm really curious to see what the third movie is like.
What's the third one again?
The House by the Cemetery. The House by the Cemetery.
Wait, which one is this one then?
The City of the Living Dead.
Oh my god, I just thought you were talking about the house. My brain's on fire! I haven't seen any of them, so that's why I was just like, yeah, okay, because I get them all, they all have similar sounding titles, and they get a little bit jumbled in my brain. Okay,
they do. Oops. Yep, so this is City of the Living Dead, and then followed by The Beyond, which we've watched, and then I have a 4K of The House of by the Cemetery, which I'm gonna watch, hopefully.
Alright, before this next poster, recording, we'll are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
Ugh, that's so gorgeous. She's crying blood. And there's a man on fire.
Oh, yeah, that does happen here, too. Like, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And there's a shot in here that I'm fairly certain was being homaged in, 28 Weeks Later. Of, like, a zombie looking in through a window. Like, a really creepy shot.
Ooh.
That I'm fairly certain
was
referenced in 28 Weeks Later. But yeah, it's a good.
Sick.
It was a good movie.
Okay.
Really gross. I was eating cheese dip while I was watching this movie.
Oh, bad.
I, like, put it down. I was like, oh.
Oh, not the cheese dip.
I think I'm done.
Ooh, that's uniquely terrible.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That made me a little bit nauseous.
Yeah.
I haven't even seen
So don't watch it while you're eating.
Cool. I'll forget that and we'll eat while I watch it.
But yes, okay. So let's talk about this riveting screen life mystery. Because I've seen this one and you had not. And your texts were really fun to get.
I, as everyone who listens to the show regularly knows, I pretty routinely will live text Terry when I watch the Little Cuts movie, because I usually watch it after him, because I sometimes will watch it during the day while I work, because I'm very privileged. But I was watching this today, and I was just like, because I had avoided spoilers, like the play. I really wanted to watch this movie. I just like had, like, it was just one of those things where I hadn't. So I had like avoided everything possible about this movie because I did not want to be spoiled. And I was not. And let me tell you, it's a beautiful ride.
The journey.
Because I was just taken to so many places. I had not one. There's a couple moments where I called out a little bit, but for most of it, I was like, I did not call even a. As the things started coming together, I sort of got it. But boy, oh boy, that first hour when everything was revealed, I was like, what the fuck is happening?
What was the movie?
Oh, yeah. Missing.
Set in the same universe as Searching. In fact, the opening of this movie is really funny because it kind of tackles, like, the true crimeification of things. Where there is, like, this show that they're watching called Unfiction. And it is literally like the ending scene of Searching, but done as like a a true crime show that they're telling a story of.
It's very funny.
Really funny. And
so this basically follows Storm Reid plays June, an 18-year-old whose father has passed away, and she's mad at her mom because, you know, teens and grief and shit. Her mom goes on a vacation with her new boyfriend to Colombia, but they are not there to get picked up when June goes to pick them up at the airport. And what that then begins a wild goose chase through the internet to figure out what happened.
Wild.
What happened to her mom. And, yeah, it's crazy pants. I'm so bummed I didn't see this in 2023 because I think it might have been on my top 10, to be perfectly honest with you. Between what it does with screen life and like the subject matter of it all, it just like really worked for me. I thought it was so smart and so interesting. Like, yeah, some of the things like, oh, you gotta task grab a person in Colombia to do this for you. Like, that's a little far-fetched. Like, there's some, and like some things I'm like,
oh,
you're only trying that now. Like, that's what you're doing now. But at the same time, it's a screen life movie. Like, you kind of have to suspend disbelief. You know, like, it's a movie. Like, it's not going to follow exact human logic all the time, which is fine. But it was just funny when I was like, it took you that long to try that password? You know what I mean? I was just like,
uh-huh.
Really? But regardless of those, like, small moments, it got my ass.
It's a very twisty story. And as someone that, I mean, you know me. I sit in a movie and my brain will just start to, like, dissect the plot and try to figure things out.
Yeah.
Aside from a couple things that I was like, oh, this is what's happening, this movie, like, completely flummoxed me every single time a new twist happened.
I'm so excited because I was curious about that because I know, like, again, I know the way you watch these movies, so I was curious. And it really does, like, out of nowhere, some of these
it's just
things,
like,
and I'm just like,
and you're just like, what? What? What?
But it works so well. And Storm Reid rules, like,
yeah,
the marketing was kind of a
great
meme a little bit. Like, in a podcast I listened to, they were kind of making fun of, like, help, my mom is missing, like, on all of the marketing for this movie. But, like, she's good. She's really good in this.
She is really good in this. It's a great cast. And I will say one thing that I love about this. This is a long movie. It's an hour and 51 minutes, but it is paced incredibly well, in my opinion.
Yes.
And the way that it is editing between all the various forms of, like, internet, because we have, like, TaskRabbit, we have FaceTime, we have voice memos, we have internet searches, we have webcams, we have Ring doorbells, we have cell phones, we have other things. Like, it's just, like, the amount of different kind of technology that is used in here makes it so that it feels like you're constantly, like, the story is just constantly moving, where instead of, like, a more traditional, like, I'm thinking, like, The Den, where a lot of it is in one location for the most part. This is, like, constantly moving.
Well, they really edit this. It's not...
Yeah.
Like, they do a lot more with editing to make it feel a little bit less like it's exactly on the screen, like, in screen life.
Right.
Which I don't think is a bad thing, though. I think, like, it makes sense to make it a little bit more visually interesting because, like, and they don't do it a lot. It's, like, opportune moments where they're, like, talking about, oh, they drove this route and they kind of cut into satellite view. And it's just these, like, little moments that take you a little bit out of, like, that digital space, but to add something a little bit more varied visually, which is interesting because usually that stuff would bother me. But with this, it's actually felt smart.
See, and I was curious how you were going to react to that because there's music in here interlaid over what's happening, and there is the shot that you called out was the one I figured was going to come up in terms of, like, pulling you out, because I too was like, okay, why are we doing this zooming shot over it? It's like, oh, it's supposed to be satellite sped up. It's like, okay, so some of this definitely shows its hand that it is being, like, edited together by someone that is a really good editor as opposed to, like, traditional found footage stuff. But I was curious how you would react with that.
I think because, like, this is, like, commercial found footage filmmaking, I think that sometimes you have to just do a little, like, you know what, I've watched enough of this stuff at, like, the various budget levels, and, like, I know how this was marketed, so, and, like, you know, it just, I think that this needed that to, like, play as well as it did, I think, and I didn't hate it, which is shocking, because I usually have, like, will nitpick at that, but it worked for this, weirdly enough.
I also think because it doesn't really give you a chance to think about it. Because, like, it is constantly...
That's a really good point, because I was just thinking, because I was trying to parse through that earlier of, like, why does that not bother me as much? Like, even though it sticks out and it's like, oh, that's interesting, and, like, that does kind of take you out of this, like, digital space that you're in, I think...
Because the way, like, I think about this is that it's... And I, especially on the rewatch, like, being able to know where the journey is going to go, Breathless comes to mind, because it feels as if, like, it feels like a movie in which... the trains are coming off the, or the tracks are coming off the train, and you just have to keep going. And so it's one of those that if you stop to think about it, some of it is a little far-fetched, but yeah. Because it is constantly propelling you down this road, you don't really have, while you're watching it, you don't have a chance to like react to anything else. Cause it's like, now this is happening. Now this is happening. Now this is happening. What is happening?
Yeah, I guess that like makes sense. Cause it's like, all right, cool. Like that is just like what logically makes sense at this point in time. And I think just, and there's also a shot at the beginning when she's, like, waiting with her sign. Like, welcome back from prison, Mom. Like, that also has a lot of, like, obvious editing because they're speeding up the footage a little bit. So I was like, mm-hmm. Okay, so we're... I see what we're doing here. Like, we're doing most of this, but, like, to add a little bit of, like, spice, we're kind of fudging it a little, but not for too long. And I think because I didn't do it the whole movie and it's, like, just right. These little moments, I think that's why it's like, okay, I get it. I understand what you're doing here. And it makes sense just from, like, a technical perspective, maybe not narratively, but, like, technically, it just helps you get from point A to point B faster. And sometimes you just, like, have to do those things, like, in movie making. Sometimes you just, like, have to get to point A to point B. And sometimes you just have to do it in a way that might not always make sense. But it's fine. Who cares?
Movies. Yeah. It made a thrilling watch.
Yes, absolutely. But also, like, very sad. I won't spoil too much here just because, but, like, it's very sad and, like, actually quite melancholy in terms of, like, what it's tackling, ultimately. And I was not expecting it to get that dark.
No.
At all. I was like, oh, my God. Like, I did not realize we were going that far in that direction. So that was unexpected. But appreciated. I appreciate when movies go that dark. Like, especially a bigger... Yeah. Marketed movie like that, kind of bringing attention to that kind of stuff. I appreciate that. Respect.
Plus, any mystery movie that, like, I don't immediately try to have sussed out who it is or, like, know why it's happening always gets an A+ for me because I love being surprised. And this movie, yeah. Even on a rewatch, I mean, it's been almost a year since I had seen it.
Okay.
It's still, like, some of the twists, even though I knew things were coming, I still was like, I don't quite remember how this panned out, and it's fun. I just think it's a fun, fun film.
Yeah, I was not expecting any of that, so I had a great time. I'm so glad I watched it, finally.
I'm so glad to hear that it might have been on, like, a top 10 list if you had seen it earlier.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good bummer, praise.
But... Look, it scratches the itch of found footage and also, like, addressing issues that are close to my heart. So, yeah. Anyway. But yeah, I'm so glad. It's on Netflix, everybody. So you have...
It is.
Easily accessible. Cool. So, what are we watching next week? We're going a little bit more on the indie side next week with the found footage.
Yes. So we are going to continue our series with Brian Bertino's Mockingbird, one that I have not seen. One of the few... of his movies I haven't seen. I'm really looking forward to it.
Have you seen The Monster?
I have not. That's the only other one.
Okay.
I guess he's only made like 4 films, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's got a small film. So I've seen half of them.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what you think. I haven't watched it in a long time, so I'm not quite sure. I can't remember. But I remember it fucked me up a little bit, so... Excited.
I mean, he's 2 for 2 for me right now, so I'm excited.
Yeah,
to see his foray into found footage.
Definitely follows into those footsteps of his other stuff. So, yeah.
Hell yeah. So that's our found footage thing for Little Cuts. Who are we talking with on Monday, Mary Beth?
So on Monday, we are chatting with Rocco Thompson, who is the co-host of the Lady Killers podcast. He's also written for a bunch of places all over the internet. And he brought with him Men in Black.
Here come the Men in Black. Galaxy Defenders. fun conversation.
It's just so fun.
Good movie. It was a good rewatch for me.
It's just a good rewatch. Does not age as terribly as one would expect. I'm not saying it doesn't have its issues, but really? I was quite shocked watching this and being like, huh, that's actually not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
And fun conversation with Rocco about it. Incredible. His story is really good.
It is really good. All right, listeners, you've heard from us, but we want to hear from you. Did you watch anything that we watched this week and have thoughts? Do you have things that you think we should be covering on the pod? Send us an email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us directly on social media. I am at mbmcandrews on Twitter, and I'm at mb.mcandrews on Instagram.
Oh my goodness, I almost choked on a hiccup. That was the weirdest thing. Could you hear that? Did that come through?
He just went, it was just like you could talk. It was just like your voice came out.
It did.
Oh, it was so funny.
I hope that comes out in the recording.
I really hope so. I desperately hope so.
And what I was trying to say is I'm at Gailey Treadful everywhere.
And of course, follow the podcast on the social media at Scarred Podcast on Blue Sky and Twitter, and at Scarred for Life Podcast on Instagram.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe. And we have a Patreon if you want to help support us. And speaking of which, do we want to tell people what we're talking about for
Fresh Wounds? Fresh Wounds. Yes, we should. That's a good idea.
So what did we talk about?
So for our Fresh Wounds this month, which comes out on Wednesday next week, we talked about Claire Denis' Trouble Every Day, her incredible sex cannibalism movie that's actually quite sad. I talk a lot because I love this movie very deeply. We have a lot of really cool conversations about desire, love, gender, all that good shit, and mad scientists. So get fucking pumped.
Get pumped. So sign up for that.
Thank you, Derek Power, for our artwork. Thank you, Sean Keller, for our music. Thank you, everybody, for listening and supporting us. It means so much to us. Please stay safe out there, but most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time.